thank you for giving me the chance to speak here, and thanks for organizing this very nice workshop. So if you read the title of my talk, Strike Melting and Quantum Criticality in Collided Metals, you may ask yourself, like, what does it have to do in the workshop on cross-related magnets and quantum spin liquids? So, yeah, I want to give a viewpoint which has been emphasized by various people in this workshop, that the defining characteristic of spin liquids is actually not the absence of spin order, but rather fractionalization and the presence of emergent gauge fields. And as I will show, within my theory of stride melting, the fractionalization and emergent gauge fields will also be the key players. So this work I did with my advisor Samtil at MIT, and the details can be found in these two papers. So the motivation for studying melting of strikes comes, of course, from the Cooke rates. And by now, it's evidence for stripe order has been found in essentially all Cooke rates using various different techniques, for instance, the neutron scattering in STM, or this is very recently X-ray scattering on YUCO. And this poses the actual question, like, is stripe order, since it's so universally present in many of the Cooke rates, is it actually an important thing to consider and take seriously, or is it more of a distraction which we should ignore when trying to understand the Cooke rates? So before getting into that, let me briefly define my terminology for stripes. So in the simplest way, a stripe is some spatially modulated pattern of charge that is driven by sort of occupying unstripe type with a certain wave vector. And it can appear on square lattices essentially in two different ways. Either it can be unidirectional, as depicted over here, or it can be a checkerboard pattern, as over here, which also conforms to this sort of scene in this oxychloride compound using STM. So this is all only like charge order. In addition, spin order appears to be important, which is this neutron scattering from LSCO. So it has added some spin to my ordering pattern, and it's very natural that you have spin ordering at sort of twice the period of your charge order. And before, we can again have unidirectional and checkerboard types of the spin order. And it's a bit more convenient, instead of looking at the actual spin of the electrons, to look at the local Neel vector, which has similar modulations than the spin of the electrons itself. So, okay, so what about the Cooke rates? So all the evidence for stripes in the Cooke rates comes from the analog type. So this is the usual phase diagram. There's antiferromagnetism, there's superconductivity, and this is pseudogap region. So over here, all the evidence for stripes has been seen, and at higher dosing, there's no evidence for stripes. So this means that somewhere on the way, high order needs to go away. And this is used, for instance, to try and explain quantum oscillation experiments, where it's like some small hole or electron pockets appear to be seen at lower dopings. And if you have stripe ordering, this will generically reconstruct the Fermi surface, and thus may lead to different kinds of pockets, which will show up in different oscillation frequencies in quantum oscillation experiments. So in addition, there's a natural question, can fluctuations of stripes, since there must be melting transition, can they be used as glue to pair the electrons and explain superconductivity? Or maybe even more interestingly, can the criticality of stripes explain certain non-familiar features of the strange metal? Essentially, can the strongly fluctuating critical order parameter destroy the integrity of the quasi particle? And so these are all important questions. It turns out that actually stripe melting in the presence of a Fermi surface is not very well understood. And that's what I'm trying to do in this particular talk. So this brings me to my outline. I will very briefly discuss an experiment of stripe fluctuation at LSCO. And then I'll present possible phases and the structure of defects, which I will use to melt stripe order. Then I'll present our theory for stripe melting the metal, and very briefly discuss some experimental predictions, and finally conclude with some final remarks. Okay, so this is the experiment I want to discuss. It's from quite a while ago on LSCO. The group of Epti was doing neutron scattering, so at some wave vector close to pi 5. And at these points, they've been observing these peaks, and they've been measuring the width of the peaks and the height of the peaks over a long range of temperatures and frequencies. And so this is what they find. So first they look at the width of the peak, which is the inverse correlation length, and plot that as a function of temperature and frequency, and find that at least if you take away sort of the very lowest points, it collapses very nicely on this linear line. Which means that the spatial fluctuations and the temporal fluctuations are essentially linearly related, or formally, the dynamical critical exponent is one. So that's the one piece of information, and then the second piece comes from the peak height, which is called the function of temperature in the limit of small frequency. And they find from just fitting this data an exponent which is close to 2. And if you use this data together with z equals 1, then this implies that the anomalous dimension of the spin fluctuations is the eta exponent is close to 1 also. Okay, so these exponents actually they're very, very bizarre. And I want to just briefly explain this. So if we have a metal, then we expect that critical fluctuations get damped by the fermions. So we have some order parameter which connects points of the Fermi surface, and quite generally, this will lead to a linear nano-damping term in the correlator of these fluctuations. And if you look at this clearly for low frequencies, this guy is strongly relevant, much more relevant than sort of this bare term. And then it will renormalize v, which connects momentum and frequency, away from 1 and in fact to 2, omega and k squared over here. And this is not only true if we have just a Fermi liquid sizing electrons, but it's actually true for most non-Fermi liquid states which we know of. We're not the first people to be surprised by this fact. So this comes from the handbook of temperature superconductivity, and it's written by Francada. And he says that one surprising experimental observation is the minimal amount of damping of the magnetic excitations in analog cuprates, especially in the normal state. That's the point. And in addition, having an anomalous dimension close to 1 is again very unusual, since for most conventional quantum critical points, this eta exponent is actually on the order of a few percent. So this is very uncommon for this conventional critical points, but it's actually very common for unconventional quantum critical points, most famously the deconfined criticality, which was advocated by Sanchez and others several years ago. So the main point is both these, z equals 1 when we expect z equals 2, and eta equals 1 when we expect essentially eta equals 0, they're sort of qualitative different things than we'd expect from conventional critical points. Okay, so now let's try to construct a phase diagram. So we have spin order, we have charge order, and it's natural to expect that the charge order, which is governed by Coulomb interactions, survives up to a higher scale than the spin order. And now if we connect this down to zero temperature, where this tuning parameter can roughly be thought of as doping, because we know that it goes away for high doping, then we may normally expect that again there will be 2 quantum critical points at zero temperature. Because they may coincide when I'm even happier, but for now let's just assume that they are separate like this. So most of essentially all the experiments are actually confined to this higher temperature region, because below we have superconductivity setting in, which doesn't allow us to make any measurements in there. So we're interested in this region, and that region, actually you don't really resolve the difference between these points coinciding and these points being separate, because the physics is determined by some by this mathematical critical point. You're kind of in the critical region of both those critical points.
Sorry, does it mean that you assume that there are 2 different mechanisms for forming a spin and charge stripe if you're saying that there are 2 critical couplings?
Yeah, in principle they are 2 different. So if you have a charge stripe, then you can order the spin stripe on top of that.
It's sort of a secondary effect, and you would expect, assuming that you would not have a charge stripe, would you expect to see a spin stripe?
So if you have a spin stripe, then you'll always need to have a charge stripe, rather by symmetry, because the charge will couple to the spin square. If you want to look at this as some purely zero temperature phase diagram, then again you have all the spin stripes, spin and charge stripe, I should say. And then in this phase diagram, we are going from the spin stripe to a stripe melted phase, which I described here as stripe liquid metal. And you know, you could go via this multi-critical point X, in which case the point would turn five, or what I'm drawing here is you can go via the sharp stripe to this particular case. Yes?
Can one have a direct transition without fine-tuning?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Seems like even classically you could.
Sorry?
It seems like even classically you could envision direct.
Well, if it's spin density, then you do, right? For the reason that you mentioned. If it's purely spin density, if it's mainly driven by spin density.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Then
once that is killed, then it will.
Then we induce the.
Well, but you can sort of.
Immediately.
Yes. Yeah, you can still imagine that. It might be.
I guess that then there is a question about the, you know, the critical point that perhaps, you know, somehow there is like a runaway flow and, you know, the natural transition is to a charge stripe rather than it. But I don't know what the situation is.
I don't know. Okay, so this is a kind of the scenario I want to describe. So, you know, before going into details, let's set up the story by writing down the order parameters. So we have the order parameter for the spin stripes, and it has like a oscillate from the bank vector Q, and then I split up into two fields. First, the phase, which characterizes the position of the stripe, like the deviation of the position of the stripe in equilibrium, and then n, which is the local Neel vector. And it's accompanied by charge stripes at a twice the wave vector. So I have the oscillation by 2q, with again some phase, in this case just the oscillation, the deviation of the stripe from equilibrium, and here they're connected by this factor of 2, same way as the q. So now, you know, this is the perfectly ordered phase. I have stripes with charge and with spin, and the Neel vector sort of changes direction from one stripe to the next. So now I can imagine like a single defect where one of the charge stripes ends. And you can see right away that here that actually the problem with, you know, attributing the correct pattern of Neel vectors in here. So in other words, we have some amount of frustration. On the other hand, if I have like a double defect where, you know, a charge stripe comes here and turns around, then we do not have this kind of problem. This raises the possibility that, you know, even though this is here the charge stripe has like a double dislocation, but actually the energy of such an object is lower than the energy cost of this object over here. And that's the scenario that I consider in this talk, where I describe this melting transition by melting these guys without by proliferating these guys here without proliferating those guys. So that's my type order phase. And once I proliferated these double defects, we arrived at a phase which no longer breaks inflation symmetry, so this stripe is melted. So in many ways it's metallic, but actually it's not quite the usual Fermi liquid. I mean, the point is, you can see here, of these are supposed to be like fluctuating patterns, and none of these stripes can end anywhere. Whereas, quite generically, if we have all kinds of possible fluctuations, then we also have fluctuations where stripes can end at some points. So this is why we like to call this phase stripe loop metal, because all the stripes form closed loops. And the distinction between these two phases can be made very precise by imagining that we put the system on a cylinder. So if we start with, say, an odd number of stripes wrapping around the cylinder, and we make all kinds of fluctuations of this type, then we can change the number of stripes wrapping around, but we can never get from an odd number to an even number. That would require these sort of defects. So in other words, this particular phase has like a V2 structure. And I mainly focused on this transition over here, which is the melting transition. The other transition here was actually studied earlier by Sudhir and Molinari. But since this is about spin liquids, briefly, connect these things to the V2 gauge theory, which is important specifically for this type of metal phase. Yeah, so again, these are our order parameters. And we can see that this actually has like imagine this, we write down the hopping of the XY field, you know, this e to the I 2 theta s, and the this Neel field, you can easily write down something of this sort. But actually, since that redundancy with this description, you know, we've written we've written this, space here as the square of to the IP.S, or also we've, you know, we can change this here by a sign and this guy by a sign without actually changing the physical S. So there's a zero redundancy in this problem, and to take this into account, we should actually couple these fields to a fluctuating V2 gate field. In other words, to modify the Hamiltonian in this way, so that the Hopping is, you know, gains like a gauge factor for both of these fields, and we put in some dynamics for the gauge field to assess the possible phases of the V2 gauge theory. So you know, as usual for when we have this kind of gauge theory, so we have to ask what are actually physical objects, and clearly e to the I to the S is not gauge invariant, so it's not a physical object, but what is physical is the product of these things along some closed loop. And you know, the flux of this theta S variable and my charge variable theta C, which is a physical one, are related in this particular way, where NC is sort of the winding around my defect configuration. So it's defined by this way. And this is just the Z2 flux around the same loop. So in the ordered phase, all these numbers here, NC and NS, need to be integers, which means that if we want to put in a single defect in the top stripe, so a place where the top stripe ends, and this guy here is just 1, this guy is always 1 over here. If this here is negative, then this product also needs to be negative. In other words, the Z2 flux around this bucket needs to be minus 1, which is commonly called a bison. And one way to graphically represent this bison is, you know, I take my links, and whenever this tau z, the z2 variable on these links, is positive, I just draw dotted lines. And when it's negative, I draw a solid line with a sort of a gray line across. And then this is a configuration where all plaquettes have a flux of plus 1. And this is a plaquette where, you know, we have plus 1, plus 1, plus 1, minus 1, so the flux is minus 1. So in the configuration without bisons, none of these gray lines end. And in the bison configuration, some of these gray lines, you know, end at this point. So this is, you know, related to the maybe more conventional way of thinking about gauge theory in the language where you have the tau x variable, which in one phase, it's like all tau x's are positive, so it's, you know, very boring, simple ground state. And if you translate this simple ground state, which is perfectly ordered, into the tau z variable, and essentially perfectly completely disordered, and you have, you know, all kinds of possible configurations. In particular, you have bison configurations. Now, in the deconfined phase of the Z2 gauge theory, where you do have these gauge these lines, the bisons are gapped, and you have, you have these configurations where none of these gray lines end, so you don't have any bisons. So this is, you know, just maybe this is a more conventional way of thinking about the gauge theory, but this one is more natural from the point of view of stripes. Let's compare this to, you know, the my stripe loop metal picture, and there's a clear connection between this representation here and my stripe loops here. Again, closed loops, no stripes ending, like here. And here we do have stripe endings, which are just the bisons, and similarly we have here these gray lines ending on bison configurations. Okay. But, you know, so this is important for the transitions which Subir was describing several years ago between the stripe loop metal and the normal metal. But I want to focus on the transition between the stripe ordered phase and this particular phase. And here the bisons are gapped, so I can essentially throw away the gauge field and just look at the water parameters without the presence of the gauge field. So then I can write down an effective theory for this matching transition, which has like an O3 model of this B field, this e to the I to the S, the displacement speed of the stripes, like an O3 model for the neural vector, and in general some coupling between these two, which however turns out to be irrelevant at the critical point. And I consider these, you know, this thing at the multi-critical point, so both of them are simultaneously critical. And then since they're classical models, you know, both the O3 and the XI model, essentially everything is known about these things. Like, we know all the critical exponents from analytical calculations, from numerics, so that's what I studied. So the only question remains, what happens if we put in the electrons? Because, you know, that was the thing I was setting out to address. Do we somehow avoid this lambda damping, which, you know, seems to go against what it seems experimentally? So now, okay, we put in the coupling between the electrons and the stripes, And the important point is that electrons can only couple to the physical order parameter rather than this, you know, this is a single B field. So the electrons couple to B squared. Okay, so they are lambda damped. So we get the lambda damping as before, omega times, you know, this field squared. But now if we do power counting, and with this exponent known from quantum Monte Carlo, from just normal Monte Carlo, we can just do power counting and find actually this kind of coupling is irrelevant at the critical point. Okay. So essentially there's no damping. The slight fluctuations dynamically decoupled from the Fermi surface. And what I've written now is dangerously irrelevant because clearly once we are far in the stripe order phase, you know, we know that stripe order is going to reconstruct the Fermi surface. So that's about the coupling to the charge. Same is true for the spin. Again, the physical spin to which electrons can couple, it's a composite of the Neel vector and the phase field, with the enormous dimension again being larger than one. And you know, the same counting applies here, so it has a negative scaling dimension as irrelevant. So what we found is that, you know, at this multi-critical point, actually the fermions decouple, which means, you know, trivially that Z is unmodified, so Z remains to be one, and we know all critical exponents we could ever want to know. And so, you know, this model is, well, it's kind of like the XY model, you know, because it's, we can extract all the exponents from studying the XY model, but actually it's not the XY star universality class, because the physical objects we are supposed to consider are these composites, like B squared. And so we know all the scaling dimensions of this model. As I mentioned, Z is 1, it's unchanged, and the anomalous dimension of the physical quantities, like charge, spin, or the spin quadrupole, are all known from numeric swings. And now this is the one we're going to compare to experiment. So within our theory, this is chiral time over omega scaled as 1 over t to the 1.92. And experimentally, from this data, they you know, fit that this thing actually goes like t to the minus 1.94. So you know, it fits remarkably well with what comes out from our simple theory. Now, so this is, okay, this is the zeroth order thing our theory produces. And you know, in principle, all of these can be measured. This may be a bit harder, but certainly the charge exponent is something which can be measured in experiments, and hopefully will be at some point to see if it matches up here. So since we know we have full control of the theory, we can calculate various physical quantities. For instance, something we can do is we can calculate how does the gap open as we go into the ordered phase. And so we can just, you know, calculate this, the value of the gap, and what we find is that at this critical point we have some scale for the stripes. Actually the scale for the reconstruction, which is to say the gap at the hotspots, is parametrically smaller than the scale, the energy scale of the stripe fluctuation. And in a somewhat related point, we can again, you know, for the reconstruction of the Fermi surface, we can determine how does the spectral weight appear at these points on the shadow Fermi surface. So eventually this is going to become like the reconstructed Fermi surface, but close to it, the spectral wave is going to appear in a certain way. And you know, from the theory, you can calculate in the, it appears with a specific power law, with all the exponents known from, you know, from studying the XY model. So you know, all this I was discussing was relying on this eta to be larger than one. I mean, this was what allowed the coupling between the, you know, the fermions and the stripe fluctuations. So this was, you know, a blessing in allowing us to solve the theory, to get a model where we can calculate things, and it also matches the experimental findings for the spin fluctuations in LSCO. So that's very nice. But if we now calculate the self-energy of the fermions right at the hotspots, so that's where the effect on the fermion is going to be the strongest, and we may expect some sort of non-fermion liquid effects, then the self-energy goes like omega to the power of eta, and since eta is larger than 1, we always retain the, you know, a complete like a sharp Landau quasi particle even at those hotspots. And of course, if you go away from the hotspots, the effect will be even weaker, and you know, we have a even less singular set energy. So why, you know, eta is nice in the sense of allowing us to solve something. It's, well, not so nice if we were hoping that this could actually explain some kind of non-thermal liquid effects for the Cook breaks. So this is essentially it. This is my conclusion. So I presented, well, I write here several tractable theories. Essentially, our theory can apply to unidirectional or various checkerboard patterns, which no significant difference. So I presented such theories of stripe melting in a metal. Within this theory, the stripe fluctuations decouple from the Fermi surface, and there are no non-Fermi liquid effects due to such critical stripe fluctuations. What we do find is experiments that agree with the LSTM experiment, and this suggests that actually this particular experiment is the first experimental observation of non-Landau quantum criticality. Thank you.
So, did you assume at this point that your lattice has a just rectangular symmetry rather than a square?
Yeah, so this was essentially just work in the continuum. But if I'm putting the lattice, well, the relation of the lattice is such that the stripe period is enough lattice, then at the critical point is an anisotropy is irrelevant.
Okay, but having one stripe that goes, I guess, in the x direction and the other in the y, and like the
interaction
between those.
Yeah, so I'm assuming a square lattice is appropriate for the Cook breaks.
I see, but then the critical point somehow has more than, I mean, it's not just, is it just all three cross x, y, or is it more complicated than that?
So the point of the question is, do you want to, at the critical point, say, restore both translation and rotation symmetry? If you're trying to do that, then it gets complicated. Right, so what I'm not discussing this particular point. So for instance, if you start with a stripe phase on a tetragonal lattice where you break rotation symmetry, then this kind of melting only applies if that symmetry remains broken in the melted phase. And then in a later stage, have a transition from sort of a distorted Fermi surface to a tetragonal like round Fermi surface.
I see, but experimentally, but once you start comparing exponents, it kind of matters, right, what transition you're assuming.
Sure, I mean, so if you have unidirectional stripes, then this is the answer, right? Then it really depends on, is your symmetry broken on the other side of the phase? Is that if the symmetry there is immediately restored, then our theory does not apply.
But in the LSTO, what
is it? I mean, so it's stripes, right, it's unidirectional.
Yeah, but what's on the other side? Once it goes disordered.
Yeah.
Question is whether there is like Neyman border on the other on the other side.
Yeah.
The size of the Fermi surface will be shifted by the Luttinger volume will be shifted by mm-hmm. linear theory. But if I look at experiments, is there such a nature of that? Because it won't satisfy the usual Luttinger rule. The Luttinger volume will, because it's a Eiffel star phase, stripe phase, right, which has G2 H field. Yeah, they're decoupled, but still when you insert a flux argument, then you get extra half in Eiffel star phase.
I think it's an escape room, but you don't.
Yeah.
But I don't think you need to invoke it. It's,
I think it's required necessarily to have an extra half and just half computation. That's all. But not really. I think it's, but I don't know. There's no.
You tell me the order phase? The sense of order? Or in the
phase? There's a phase here where stripes are disordered.
Yeah, disordered.
Yeah, in that phase, stripes are disordered. There's a G2 gauge field. Is it deconfined or not?
So the gauge theory is deconfined. So
yeah. So then you should have the Luttinger volume should be different.
Something changed by factor.
There's a factor of half from a usual Fermi liquid compared to that, because there's a when you insert a, it's Masaki is a
colleague.
So.
It's hard to imagine that happening.
That's
what. You know, junk form because it was still good, and then you have, you know, the firmologists doing their own thing. Why should the firmologists change?
People license taking money down.
Okay, this is a discuss that later.
So I sort of found it very curious that you don't see anywhere the coupling to this. There is no Landau damping anywhere. Because you see, if I would start from the naive spin density, I think commensurate spin density, and I would just look how the Landau damping arises, you know, I would see that at the ordering momentum, there would be no coupling to the fermions. But away from it, at a certain point, I would start to see progressively increasing the Landau damping. I would start to see that my spin excitation would be damped. So here you never see it. So it basically Q and omega independent terms, you never see the coupling together. But then I was curious, you should see somewhere then the excitation of particle hole continuum somewhere in the experiment as well. So what you would see your stripe excitation, but then there should be an excitation of a Fermi surface as well, which a particle hole excitation, which would be this particle hole continuum. So are they appearing anywhere?
So in this melted phase, the Fermi surface is essentially exactly the same as in the regular metric sphere.
Right.
All the excitations will be the same.
So, why are you saying I don't see then the standard excitation of in a cuprate, so I don't see a standard excitation, which are particle hole excitation, like in the usual metal?
You have the same excitations, yes.
Yeah, you have the same excitation.
You have the same particle excitation in the stripe melted phase.
As in a okay.
As in normal familiar. Yeah,
they're not seen experimentally. They are not being seen experimentally.
Right.
The density is too small probably.
Right.
Because these speed excitation has been greatly enhanced due to proximity to some instability.
But you see, if I go to the overdoped cuprates, you know, the size of this excitation are sizable enough that I can determine them in neutrons, and what they see is a sort of a continuous change from overdoped to underdoped. I mean, the intensity is enhancing, but it doesn't seem to be, something dramatic going on. So I'm curious, why don't you don't see them also in the underdoped? Because they should see a sort of different Q dispersion problem.
Intensity
is low. No, that's wrong.
So you mentioned that in this melted phase, the Fermi surface decoupled from fluctuations of the strain. Mm-hmm. So that means the transport properties are same as the Fermi equilibrium.
Yes, so the stripe fluctuations will contribute at some point, but they will actually be subleading. So the transport properties will be determined by the Fermi equilibrium.
So it's like standard, you would expect that standard.
It's like standard term with the type transport. Yes.
So just clarification, what you call the hotspot vector, it's incommensurate in that case.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very close to the end format.
It's reasonably close to the end format.
Because is it in special nesting at this permissionless nesting for this
No, I don't think so. I think that was probably, actually using these in the elliptical dispersion, and there's some generic ones on the Fermi surface. There's another thing. Now, clearly, if you have something connecting sort of parallel, point on the Fermi surface, then the soil will change a bit because the damping is no longer omega or something like omega over Q. That's a little bit different. But, here in this case, it doesn't seem to be important yet.
Right, just curious, looking on this picture, are you assuming a QQ instability or pi minus Q pi plus? So pi minus QQ, what is shown on this? So is it diagonal? What you've drawn, because whenever you are having incommensurate, you can either have a QQ structure or you have a Q pi minus Q structure. So they are not identical, so which one you considered? Or incommensurate.
mean, I guess it depends on how you want to define your queue in the first place. So I guess the queue which I'm plotting here is defined for the user, you know, the point, so it's pi and pi minus something small.
Okay, so that's pi, pi minus delta.
Yeah.
Okay. And not pi minus delta, pi minus delta.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.